AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
This week on the best podcast in baseball, over at the GM meetings in Las Vegas, Gordon Whitmire and I fanned out among the general managers to ask them a simple question. Who would be the next National League Central team to win a World Series? It'll be 10 years the next time there's a World Series since there was an NL Central team in it. Are any of them close? That's what we'll discuss in a brand new best podcast in baseball. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and by now you know my guest. It is, of course, longtime baseball writer, Cincinnati Inquirer, baseball writer, Cincinnati Reds, beat writer, but you probably also know his work from covering the Cubs on the north side for the Chicago Sun-Times. It is, of course, Gordon Whitmire. Gordon, how are you? Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, thanks, man. You too. Are you doing well?
Yeah. I'm thankful for the idea, all credit to you, that you had, because not just that, like, it was like, okay, this will be an interesting story to sort of explore, but I thought the answers we got were really more interesting than I expected. I didn't know if they would elaborate. I didn't know if they would be dismissive. I didn't know how the executives that we talked to would respond. But a lot of them did either in thoughtful or even quippy ways that I thought really painted a clear picture of the landscape of baseball and how it's just competitive tectonic plates have shifted to the coasts.
And why it's been 10 years. And by the way, this drought, it's 9 seasons now in which neither Central Division in either league has had a team make the World Series. That's the longest drought by 3 years. So by 50% since the division was initiated in 1994. So I agree with you. Like, by the way, thanks for the shout out on the idea, but I didn't know where it was going to go. My thinking was we're there with access to all the GMs in baseball every team in baseball is one of their top two execs. And yeah. How can we, what can we do that that takes advantage of that and says something about our teams? And in my case, I cover the Cincinnati Reds, who were, you know, the third wheel. I don't know if that's not the right metaphor, but anyway, they were third place, right? Out of three teams from the division that made the playoffs. They're the team with the young star and Ellie De La Cruz and the team with the best starting pitching and with a Hall of Fame bound manager. And yet it still doesn't feel like they're close to being in the World Series, much less winning it. And then, so what do people think? What do people think about my and just within the division, knowing that there was a drought? So anyway, but I agree with you, like where it went really said a lot about the where the money is, because that's what it boiled down to. It boiled down to the money.
All right. Set the stage for readers. What was the idea, the question we asked, and what was our approach?
Okay. So the idea is, no names attached to this, so you can be as candid and honest as you're willing to be. And you can give us some insight into your choices. But the question being, which National League Central team will be the next one to win a World Series? And I thought one of the, pretty straightforward, but what it revealed, and I'm jumping ahead from what you asked me here, but you discovered it and I discovered it in separate conversations with different various executives, that it revealed the sense of kind of how the industry has lapped the division with resources and the ability to put together what it takes, not to get to the playoffs, not to navigate the regular season, but to navigate an increasingly daunting postseason. And we saw that, you know, you look at the, I mean, look at that World Series, but not only that, look at the team that lost the World Series. They were within an out or two of winning it.
An inch or two of winning it.
They had the fourth highest payroll, but they almost didn't make it out of the LCS.
Well, they also have a fourth highest market.
Right.
I mean, so, that shouldn't be lost on it.
Well, that's what I said. They had the fourth highest payroll, but I mean,
but they have a huge market too.
And a huge market. Yeah. So they can do that. They should be there. That should be where they're at. But like as one of the people I talked to said, just being a smart ass about it, or, you know, basically said more or less, does realignment count?
Yeah.
You know, are you going to let me consider realignment? Because that would be my answer. In other words, it's going to take long enough that there's going to have to be some kind of, as you point, you use the term tectonic shift. There's going to have to be some other tectonic shift that comes to redefine what the National League Central is before we see another World Series winner out of it.
I thought the best answer we got was, quote, "I don't know. That other guy already asked me," end quote.
Yeah. I accidentally doubled up on a guy you'd already talked to, and he's my answer.
He didn't have any interest in talking to me either, so that's fine. I guess it isn't much of a surprise that the Cubs finished high in the vote. We talked to executives from 21 clubs. And the breakdown was 11 for the Cubs, 7 for the defending division champs Brewers, 1 for the Reds, 2 abstained, 0 for the Cardinals, and 0 for the Pirates. We asked all 5 teams in the division. All of them gave us an answer of some type, and we asked them not to pick their own teams. So mm-hmm. that kind of framed it a little bit. Were you surprised that the Cubs rang out as the leader, or did you expect?
Yeah, I was.
Really?
I was. I was surprised. First of all, I was surprised that the Reds didn't get maybe 2 more votes, but maybe more than 1 vote just because of the pitching they start with. And it just tells you it to me, that just screams the resources side of things. And then I thought it might be closer with the Brewers, although it was fairly close, 11-7. But I thought it might even be closer just because the Brewers keep doing it. And as one of our respondents said, who picked the Brewers, they have so much young talent and they're not going away. They might even get better.
Yeah. That was
rattling
off
all the guys on the roster that he figured would get better. And mm-hmm. I don't think he's wrong. And if they, you know, anybody who doubts that, just look at what you might've thought of them coming off of 2024 and going into 25. It roster wise, it looked conspicuously like they took a step back, and instead they led the majors in wins. So I thought that the Brewers would get more love than they did, but what it boiled down to, and plus I thought, you know, the Cubs had, loss, they had free agent losses that I thought, and everybody who pays attention and certainly knows this, the Cubs don't spend at a level that their resources say they can, and they don't like, in, you know, recent history suggests they don't like any part of that really deep end of free agent commitments. And with the labor negotiations starting up now, CBA expiring at the end of the year, even more so, you would think they would not approach those waters. So I thought they might look at the Cubs and say, well, they're not going to be as good as they were this year, but the Brewers aren't going away. I figured the Brewers would win, actually.
Yes. You know, when you think about it, Matt Arnold's won back-to-back Executive of the Year awards. That's voted on by his peers. So yeah. It wouldn't be a surprise if his peers also voted on his team being there. I think there is a considerable amount of respect for what he does in the smallest market to remain competitive than to go out and have, like you said, the best record. You know, this, I do wonder if the Brewers are approaching the same point where the Cardinals were once. And you look at like what they pulled off last year, which was a remarkable trade when you think about it. They traded one of the best relievers in the game, Devin Williams, a guy who had won reliever of the year, been an all-star as both a setup man and as a closer. Traded him to the Yankees, and what they get in return is a pitcher to help before injury, who they then can trade, but also a rookie of the year top three vote getter, you know, an infielder who provides them some stability and becomes part of that style of play. You know, they have a way of identifying when to move from somebody that is driven by cost. So there is like an automatic kind of like escape hatch there that triggers, this guy's getting too expensive, move him. And they are really good at identifying talent either as they develop or they bring in. I do get the sense, though, that they've done it now for enough years that other teams are starting to mimic them. And the question will become, when do other teams start surpassing them, or do the Brewers pivot into some new approach that will help them? You know, I think there are pressures in place in Milwaukee, like that escape hatch where a guy gets to a certain point in his salary, Josh Hader, Devin Williams, we've seen it all.
Corbin Burns,
and they move on from him, you know, right. Yeah. Corbin Burns is a great example. And so that's just like, that's like a litmus, you know, that's like a quick, it's just a gear that they have that automatically triggers when a guy gets to this point and outweighs this performance, we can't have that salary. And I wonder if like other teams, they don't have that because they can spend, but they start applying that same kind of thing to their own thing. And then all of a sudden teams are catching up with the Brewers. And that happened to the Cardinals with the draft, right? Like they were able to find talent later in the draft because of how they approached it, the value formulas they used, what they specifically look for. Eventually other teams started copying that, mimicking that, improving upon that, then adding in development elements that the Cardinals did not, looking for traits that the Cardinals did not. And the Cardinals were surpassed and had to play catch up. I wonder if we're getting at that point with the Brewers.
Well, the thing about the Brewers and their uncanny ability to, as you say, maybe shed a guy at the right time, I'm not sure they've completely done that. It is.
I don't know if it's at the right time so much as it's just scripted when they're going to move on. Like but they clearly have like an internal metric that says this guy has surpassed the value that we can pay for.
Okay.
Him. But move on.
Let's say they're good at that, mediocre at that, or they have a formula for it or whatever. It only works if the underlying player development is there in the first place. That's
great
what
point.
It's all built on.
Great
so,
point.
So it's almost exactly the comparison with the Cardinals. It's just what you do with those players. The Cardinals didn't win championships or get to those World Series in 2011, 2013. And of course, you know, I think you referenced it in relation to the Dodgers, but I think they still have more World Series championships than anybody in the National League.
They do with 11, correct?
Okay. So obviously player development is part of that, and it certainly was back in the day. But they also did a good job of, you know, making a trade for Jim Edmonds and then signing him
right.
To a long-term contract, making a trade for Arenado when he had a long time left on his contract, trading for Goldsmith and then re-signing him. These are difference makers. These are the guys that are the difference between being a good team and being a championship team. And so I give the Cardinals a lot more credit for picking how they spend, when they spend and commit to guys too over the years. Now it seems like, it doesn't even seem like it. I think they've come out and said it in recent years. I mean, they're taking a step back from that spending
right.
model.
Yeah.
And so they're retooling completely in how they do things from the bottom up, I believe. I mean, you obviously are fluent in all that. You know
better. Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the answers from a couple of the executives that was interesting in regards to the Cardinals was the notion that they were like, well, it could be so long for the NL Central that the Cardinals are actually the answer because they'll have built their way back from the ground up and then outfitted it and then be the team that is best suited to go out there and win the World Series. It was both a compliment. The the executive I talked to, the executives I talked to, they were very high on what Chaim Bloom's either skill set or what they perceive to be his plan is, but they also were commenting on how long it could be before the NL Central makes it.
I don't know if I'd take that as a compliment at all, even from a Cardinals standpoint.
Maybe.
I mean, I get it, but and by the way, Chaim Bloom hasn't proven he can do anything. It has.
No. I'm just saying that was their view. They were complimentary.
Right.
Yeah. But their point was that it could be a while. But that also is, you know, saying it could be a while for the NL Central.
Well, I'll tell you something about some of this crap, and the Cardinals are. Again, you know more about a lot more about it than I do. From the outside looking in, I would begin to consider putting them in this bucket, but the Cubs are certainly, I think the Cubs in some ways invented this bucket a decade and a half ago. The retooling, no matter what your track record is, like completely tearing it down and using a tanking formula of some sort to just reinvent yourself. The Cubs did it ignoring their revenue resource advantage. Fine, whatever. We can talk all about that. I think it's a lazy, unimaginative way to go about trying to compete. It's obviously all about this success thing they talk about.
And
if you break it down and if you pay attention to the behavior, that's not about sustained competitiveness for a penny. That's about a sustained level of minimal success and able to backfill enough that you can convince enough people enough of the time to buy a ticket.
Payroll efficiency is the buzz phrase.
Right. And it's what we hear Jerry DePoto in Seattle when he says 54% is the goal. That's what you're trying to build for, because if you can sustain that, then you go a little up or a little down. You're always kind of in play. And when it breaks right, like you could argue this year for the most part, you can maybe do something special. Carter Hawkins in Chicago, the general manager of the Cubs. I talked to some people who were in a meeting where he stood up in front of other executives in an org meeting and said, "Our goal is to win 87 games a year."
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's contradictory to what we grew up with in professional sports. It should be contradictory to the bargain that you make with the customer when you charge them money to watch your games. So it bothers me trying to build this model that just kind of rolls along just to keep it running. I'd rather have a front office that's like a front office and an ownership that's like Phillies, where they'll go get the best players and try to win. And they have a right to charge fans a decent price for the ticket and whatever their TV services are. But if I'm a fan there, I know they're giving me what traditionally in past years was the effort that most front offices would give you. We're going to try to put together the best of our resources any given year, the best team we can to try to win a pennant that year. That's just simply not happening right now. And when you see these, and I'm going to make one more point, and I'll give up the podium here. Because this stuff fires me up sometimes on behalf of the fans. When you see these dramatic teardowns, these dramatic multiple steps backward to with the idea that we're going to follow that model or that model and build it back up to this degree that we then think might be sustainable. But we're going to retool what our model is. I wrote this in regards to the Cubs years ago. I use this as an example. When I was young, my high school brother got an old 1952 pickup truck from our dad as a project. He liked to tinker with cars.
Uh-huh.
He said, here, do what you can with this. So he and a buddy got out there one day after school and decided they were going to take most of it apart, because they had a vision for what they were going to put back together. They had probably 100 and some pieces of that vehicle, most of the engine in pieces, some of the body, by the time my dad got home from work. And my brother was so proud to show him what he'd done. And my dad just looked at it straight faced and said to him, "Son, it's a lot easier to tear it apart than to put it back together."
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, to this day, and I won't tell you how old either one of us are, to this day, that 52 pickup truck has not been put back together.
Yeah.
It goes doubly, triply so in major league sports. It is so hyper competitive that for you to think that you can pull the wool over people's eyes and just get them to believe that, hey, we're going to do this and that's going to be better in the long term, good luck with that. It might, and it might not be. Whatever your plan is, good luck with that.
I think it was interesting that, you know, like I said, I'm 11 of the 21 that we spoke to voted for the Cubs. And in a way, they saw in the Cubs what the Cubs refused to be themselves, which is
Yes. The
giant of the division. You know, over and over and over again, we heard from people that said, you know, the Cubs have the resources. You have to go with the payroll. And I appreciated the honesty there, because, you know, so often if you're in a press conference and you're talking to a team from a small market, they'll talk about, well, the payroll doesn't always win. It does seem like there's something of a shift in tone around baseball, and it definitely has to do with the onrushing expiration of the CBA. It definitely has to do with the Dodgers being so good and spending so much money. You know, the Dodgers have 5 pennants since the National League Central has its most recent one.
Yeah.
5 pennants. They have 5. Like, how many teams in baseball have 5 pennants in their history?
That's in 9 years. In history stretch.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, the Rockies don't. Rockies are, you know, 30 plus years old now. Marlins have 2.
The Reds are the oldest franchise. Well, just forget the oldest franchise. 1903 was the first World Series. Just take the teams.
Yeah.
1903. My God.
That's crazy. They have 5 in the last, you know, since the NL Central has won. But I did think that was interesting, that there was a level of like, all right, you know, we have to put on a good face when we make a comment about like, well, we're the little engine that could, or, you know, farm system, we can build this team. And there is a genuine sense, and the Cardinals share it, and other teams will say it too, that this division is vulnerable. Or I'm sorry. Yeah. That this division is vulnerable in the sense that it can be won by draft and development. But I think the understanding there is that it's that way because the Cubs don't act like a big market team that allows them to be a draft and develop division.
And from the Cubs ownership standpoint, it's an ideal place to be. I mean, there's no other team that can boast the economic strength that they have and still feel like we only have to flex 50% of it to be competitive.
Yeah.
And in doing so, we can do the equivalent of what the Reds and the Pirates do when they pocket revenue sharing money. We can become extremely profitable by hiding behind, in the Cubs case, hiding behind the luxury tax threshold, knowing that nobody else in the division is going to go near it.
Right.
If they spend $200 million on a payroll, they look like big spenders. They're still flexing their advantage. But I can't remember what outlet it was that not too long ago put out a list of what the percentage of estimated revenues were being spent on payroll
for
each team. And the Cubs were in the 30-something percent range. I think the Reds were above the Cubs in percentage.
Yeah, I got to tread lightly with that because that's all estimated. And
It's all estimates, but there is a little bit. There's because the numbers are all the same estimate. They're all estimated from the same known bases. So it's right. It doesn't include all the revenues. I would argue that if anything, if they're saying the Cubs are spending 34-36% of their revenues on payroll, we know what the payroll is. I would say that revenue is probably being underestimated by a lot. There's certainly the ability to spend is being underestimated
maybe.
A lot.
Yeah, because no, entirely
all
possible.
All the ancillary revenues with some of the properties outside the stadium and their own network, et cetera, et cetera.
The Cubs are in a top five market. White Sox and Cubs are Chicago. That's according to the market score that baseball applies for the purposes of some of its revenue sharing and also for its just perception of its market and compensation draft picks and all that stuff. Chicago's fifth. The other four teams in the National League Central are in cities that are in the bottom five. That just like puts the disparity in context. However, I do want to ask you, do you think all that, when we talk about market size, do you think that's all a fig leaf? Because you mentioned that the Cubs are using it as a reason not to spend. Well, nothing's stopping these other teams from saying, well, we could maybe go beyond for a little bit, right? Do you think it's a cover for the whole division in a way?
Oh, I think that's a great call. I've used Pittsburgh as an example for years as a team that's been that's been selling its fan base a bill of goods based on the 1980s. Since the 1980s, the economic dynamics in the game have changed dramatically since let's just put since Peter Eubrot took over as commissioner back in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. I believe it was he was before Giamatti.
Yeah. Yep.
So it was after he did the 84 Olympics. So
correct.
And he helped redefine and revalue things like broadcast rights and the league revenues. And then a lot of things began to sort of fall like dominoes after that for many teams. But there was a time in the 80s and 90s when the disparity was real and there were markets that were struggling to make money and to pay enough to players to compete. There were some real concerns then. I would argue now that while there's real disparity, there's no real concerns about whether teams are going to make money versus lose money, whether they're profitable.
Gotcha.
Or not.
Yeah.
The shared revenues, the shared national revenues are so enormous now. All the owners, I believe all or most of the owners are billionaires. Their franchises are all worth probably $1.7 billion plus since the one at the bottom, Tampa Bay, sold for $1.7 billion in the most recent franchise sale. That tells you what people believe about the economic strength of the industry. If it's not a perfectly clear signal of what the actual revenues are, and so you don't lose money on this anymore. You make money year over year, and there's a reason why baseball operations bosses now make so much money and have so much relative job stability, certainly compared to their managers.
Yes.
And even the players, even the star players, and it's because they're sort of economic supervisors for the profitability of the owners on the
correct.
Baseball side.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Far more than they are tasked with winning a World Series.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And these things all have to be put in. These are contexts that are useful for keeping in mind when we evaluate the messaging on both sides in these labor negotiations that are coming up.
What does this mean for this winter? You mentioned the labor negotiations coming up. There's just about, as we're talking, there's about 12 months and 1 week before the expiration of the current collective bargaining agreement. It is almost a fait accompli that then a lockout will start once the expiration of the CBA. That take heart, fans. That doesn't mean that they're will be a delay in baseball. A lockout can go for months and the clock will tick.
But we saw it last time.
Right. With no scheduled games, it's not really costing games. It's just, I don't know. It's just a thing then.
It's delaying spending by the owners.
It's delaying spending by the owners, and it buys time with no real deadline for negotiations, and it can be a PR bruise because it counts as a labor stoppage. But with until there are actually games lost, then it really, you know, that's sort of when, to me, the rubber hits the road, right? You know, if they have a lockout, I get it that there's, I get that no one fires up the hot stove during a lockout. Totally understand that. But maybe we can have a speedy off season without much problem. It's when there's a loss of games that it really kind of takes hold. So we have that all there. What do you think that means? I mean, ESPN, some other places have reported that the Pirates intend to spend, you know, the, both the Pirates and your Cincinnati Reds have been linked to Kyle Schwarber.
I'm going to stop you right there.
Yeah.
The Pirates. Please do. Great example. The Pirates.
Yeah. Yep.
They supposedly made an offer to Kyle Schwarber. They're supposedly serious about Kyle Schwarber. Is that what I heard?
They made that offer to, reportedly made an offer to Josh Naylor. Interest in Kyle Schwarber.
So to me, when I look at this and I look at the realities and I judge it based on behavior that we've seen, mm-hmm. and the context of the times we're in, to me, that tells me that this is laying groundwork for the public messaging as we get into these negotiations. The Pirates were never going to be in on Naylor unless his market bottomed out for some unforeseen reason. And they're certainly not in play for Kyle Schwarber under any circumstances.
So you think that that's just a setup to be like, oh, shucks, we finished runner up.
Hey, we
sure did try.
We tried. We showed that we have genuine interest in some of these players at the top of the market, and we just can't compete. We need a new system. Now, to me,
long game, not just for Pirate fans, but to give the owners that little bit of Exhibit A.
I'm curious to see how many more teams sort of demonstrate that.
I think it's real. I think it's real that stars are galaxying, you know, are collecting. I called it, you know, the clustering of stars on the coast. I think that's a real thing. And I talked with David Stearns, not just during the GM meetings here, but going back to spring training. And I was talking to him, you know, because he has the experience with the Brewers and now runs the Mets. And I thought, who better to talk to about what it's like to try to thrive and compete with a small market, the smallest market, to then now go to try and compete with the biggest damn wallet in baseball, right? With Steve mm-hmm. Cohen, who can go and sell a solid gold toilet for $12 million. But, you know,
and not make the playoffs with a $350 million payroll.
Right. And have just the collection of, you know, great players, you know, it's just, he has tremendous talent on that field and some of the highest dollar thing. And one of the descriptions that Stearns gave me was that, you know, like he said, well, you know, the benefit to the smaller market teams is that they have roster flexibility. We lock in these guys to these long-term deals, and we're probably paying them beyond their value towards the end, but we can't move on. So we have to manage our roster a little differently. Whereas a small market team, they can move on from guys. They can be more nimble. They can move on. And I was like, well, what you're describing is a farm system. Like exactly. I literally said that to him. I was like, the way you just described that is you're saying a small market team can benefit because it can handle its roster like a farm team.
Yeah.
Right. Without the long-term guarantees. I said, what kind of, like, where are the stars going to be if all of these, who is, you know, we got the holidays coming up, right? All right. If you're a Cardinal fan this holiday season and you want to get a jersey for your kid to grow into, not a bad idea to get a JJ Weatherholt jersey and maybe number TBD, right? But then, you know, you're going to have them for at least 6 years. Well, the problem with that is, you know, you start acting like a small market team and it's like, well, he'll only be here for 6 years. And you're just grooming him for that bigger deal, which is going to come elsewhere. That is a clear and present, really, concern for all the holiday gift buyers in Pittsburgh. How long is a Skeens jersey going to matter?
Okay, well, yeah. You're right. That's the economic system in the game.
I'm just saying, are they developing schemes to then move him elsewhere? And if so, then you better take advantage of peak schemes by competing.
You know, and that's the thing. That's what makes that's what makes this notion of going after these other free agents all of a sudden, this winter, supposedly going after these guys, so absurd on its face. Paul Skeens hit the ground running in the major leagues the minute he showed up. He's the best young pitcher in the game. You could debate whether he's the best pitcher in the game. He's the most valuable in the sense that he's pitching at the highest level in the game and performing with the best in the game at a cheap level. This is where you last year you should have been building around him. And I don't care if it's you should have got, you know, you should have been in on anybody, any of these guys whose markets turned into, like Bregman and Alonzo, whose markets turned into short-term deals with opt-outs.
Yeah.
Been on any impact player like that. You should have put more bullpen together. You should put more hitting together. You should be doing that now. And it doesn't have to be on 10-year contracts, but you should be going in and raising that payroll from whatever it was, under 100 million or around 100 million, whatever, to 150. You can afford it with revenue sharing and national revenues. You can afford that.
I think it was around 75 million and some bottle tops.
Yeah, there you go. So
if I'm joking. Added 50, I'm joking.
Well, whatever it is, if you added 50 million to it, you're still a low payroll team relative to most of the league.
Do you want me to really get your blood boiling? All right. So I totally understand where you're coming from. And I think it's a really interesting point is that, like, you could almost do a straight analysis, right? Just take what Paul Skeens is making, then calculate whatever internal number you have for the value of his return. Now go spend to close that gap.
There you go.
How much better team you're going to be. Well, so now can I really get your blood boiling? How about this? The Pirates aren't paying all of Paul Skeens' salary, because remember, he gets to pull from that pool that all the teams pay into. So in effect, some of what he's making, like his salary for the past year, because of that prospect and incentive bonus and the war and all that stuff for the pre-arb players, is a pool. You know, the Pirates are supplementing the Pirates are getting to supplement his salary with help of other teams.
No,
I'm not taking advantage of it.
There you go.
The floor is yours. How angry does that make you?
And that's the thing. Well, it makes me angrier at the Pirates for the same reason. I mean, they're still paying exactly what they would pay if there was none of that incentive pool money there. And so it's still the same calculus to me from a Pirate standpoint, but the idea that they're getting revenue sharing and they're getting a higher value player paid for at a higher rate by the league. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is all, what are you there for? If you're not going to strike, then at least strategically strike to markedly improve your team. I don't mean go sign Juan Soto type deals. I just mean go get, and they've done this before, go strike in places in the market that markedly improves your team, that at least on paper makes your roster look competitive in a division, by the way, that you should be able to make noise in if you do that.
Same goes for the team that you cover, the Reds. So what do they do?
Like, absolutely.
I mean, how?
And they're doing the same thing. They're one of the more profitable teams in baseball, too, by pocketing that money. And because their TV revenues didn't go up this year, they stayed flat. They're keeping their payroll flat. And they're going to wind up going from a playoff team that I wouldn't say was a surprise playoff team if you looked at them going into the season. But by midseason, they certainly were a surprise that they made the playoffs. And now I don't know how.
The Cardinals run in 2011, right? Cardinals deserve a lot of credit for that run, but so do the Braves falling apart, right? Every great comeback story has some team that gave up the ground. Reds made the playoffs, but that doesn't happen if the Mets and their, you know, $350 million team doesn't scuffle to the finish, right? That's what allowed it to happen. So how did the Reds,
Hall of Fame.
How did the Reds capitalize on this? Because they got one vote in the poll that we did. But I'm wondering if you did like a blind taste test on the talent on each of these rosters, if they might have not gotten more votes than that. They might have stood out as like, well, that's the team with the most talent to do it. So what do they do to outfit it, and then why won't they?
Well, first of all, I don't know about that talent thing. Ellie okay. De La Cruz, sure. Hunter Green, absolutely. The starting rotation, you make a case. But you go beyond that, and like you start stacking up guys against the other positions in the league.
Yeah.
Any of their outfielders? Are any of their outfielders better than any of the Cubs outfielders? Nobody thinks, I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong's got tremendous upside, but nobody thinks you're looking at slam dunk Hall of Famers in that outfield.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, you know.
A couple of years ago, you would say, oh, the Reds have all this young talent. But as I tried to point out, even coming off of that season, look around the league. Young talent is a theme around the league. And so, you know, is Ellie De La Cruz better than Corbin Carroll? You know, you tell me. He's got a tremendous skill set. He hasn't come close to tapping the ceiling on it.
Right. No, that's all fair.
If he ever does, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Hey, he might be the first billion-dollar player.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, would he be with the Reds? Hey, I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, okay, I'll add this aspect to it. Two of the division teams, the Cubs and the Brewers, had players accept qualifying offers. Imanaga with the Cubs and mm-hmm. Woodruff with the Brewers. You know, I don't know. Like, I would imagine the Brewers were braced for that. Otherwise, they wouldn't have offered it. You get the sense that the Cubs were a little surprised by that. That Imanaga.
That's their own damn fault. Why right. wouldn't you think he'd accept it?
But both of those teams now have whatever bit of budget payroll they thought they were going into this offseason with. It was a $22 million give or take, right? And now it's gone. So does that open up some level, some avenue for if the Reds spend, they could be the team to beat? Does that create that opportunity for them with this market?
Well, I think the short answer to that is yes. And I would even say it was there before that. I didn't have faith in the Cubs going out and spending what it would take to make that roster sort of division proof, you know, sort of division rival proof. I think they could, at least in theory, at least on paper, they have the resources. They could do that. I never had the faith that they would. I thought they would add some pitching and, you know, they're not going to have Kyle Tucker, and they're probably not going to replace Kyle Tucker's bat, except with maybe Owen Casey and maybe some role players. So it's there. I think it's there. You know, the Brewers have great young talent. They catch the ball like as well as at least, I mean, the Cubs and the Brewers are among the best in the game at catching the ball. And that's going to continue. They still have to pitch, though. And so because the Reds start with an entire pitching rotation that was one of the best in the league last year, and, you know, they're going to keep Hunter Green. They've got some electric arms coming up that are very young in the process of coming into the league now. So if they decided to spend – so they ended the season last year at about $119 million on their big league payroll. If they spent – 140,
yeah,
150, which is not unreasonable. And I think you could get short-term guys. In this climate with the labor negotiations happening right now, I think there are short-term deals out there for really good players. I think we're already starting to see some of that. So I would say, yeah, if you go out and you were to get a couple of back-end bullpen pieces and I would even say if you were able to get one impact hitter, the difference a guy like, I know this is this sounds absurd because he was a MVP runner up, but Kyle Schwarber. Mm-hmm. If you were able to put Kyle Schwarber in that on last year's team, on last season's team, all else being equal, they might make a run at the Brewers, but they would certainly, you know, they won 83 games.
Yeah.
That difference alone, they lost four or five 1-0 games.
Wow.
That difference alone might have been the difference between 90 wins and where they finished. So the right impact bat, especially in that ballpark, could elevate them very quickly if they decided to go spend some money. So short answer is yes.
That's fast. And you kind of outlined the move. So is there also the other side of that possibility? Does the division idle enough that a team like the Pirates or like the Cardinals that may not exactly look like a contender accidentally become one?
Well, weren't the Pirates just like 2 years ago, weren't they the first team to 20 wins in the league?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know,
well, they had a great like 50 game start. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the Pirates are far enough off. Unless the Reds do some really interesting creative things in the offseason, they might be too far off. Based on what I saw, their starting pitching kept them in so many games, but they just couldn't do enough of anything else well enough to sustain, a steady flow of wins. I mean, they took so many steps back every time they took a step forward. I mean, there were three times in September alone where they looked eliminated. They had they looked dead in water. And it goes back to, you know, the Mets absolutely collapsed.
Yeah.
And they backed in. Shit, they didn't even win the last game of the day they clinched. They didn't win, which was classic. I mean,
That's right. Yeah.
So, anyway, sure, it's there. It's there. And I also think here's the interesting thing, right? When we talk about this to me is the most interesting thing of all. We saw one of the greatest World Series of all time
here. Mm-hmm.
And
for sure.
And for all the Shohei Ohtanis and Vlad Juniors that were out there, and they did their job. They had big moments, big games. The pitching defined that series. Just like the ALCS before it, which was an epic ALCS, the pitching defined that series. And I think when you look at these NL Central teams, that's like almost always, that's the key, right? The Cubs, dereliction of duty by the front office. They didn't do jack at the trade deadline. They were so tepid. That they at the end of the day they were not as good a team. I don't think they were as good a team at the end of the season as they were before the trade deadline.
I mean, they weren't, because Pete Crow Armstrong had really cooled off. I mean, right, he had like a sub 300 average on the, or a 300 on base percentage on the road and in the second half.
Had a bad July and a whole thing. But
yeah.
But their pitching also was an issue. It wasn't as good.
Yeah.
And they knew that was what they needed. But had the Reds been able to advance, or had they've got the kind of starting pitching that if they have enough bullpen and they have just enough ways to score a few runs, they could be an October type of a team.
Right.
And so, I mean, that's actually, that goes into one of the reasons I thought they'd get a couple more votes in that survey, just because they might be built better, you know, going into a short series against the Dodgers, even though it was a Dodger Stadium. You had Hunter Green on the mound in game one. Hunter Green, when he's on, can beat pretty much anybody.
Yeah.
They won that game. What happens? I don't know. They wound up scoring against that bullpen before Dave Roberts figured out that he couldn't use this guy and that guy.
Yeah, that was kind of the Yeah,
but they had such big leads at the time that
every team that followed had the Reds to blame for why the Dodgers had a shift in their bullpen.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna ask you the question that we asked the execs then. Who do you think Gordon Whitmire of the Cincinnati Inquirer, a longtime baseball writer, you know, covered the Cubs as a beat, covered the Twins as a beat, covered the Mariners as a beat, covered the Reds as a beat? Who do you think is the next NL Central team that's most likely to win a World Series?
The Nashville Outlaws.
The Nashville Stars. It's the Stars. The Nashville Stars.
They're going to be the Stars?
Yeah.
Okay, the Nashville Stars.
Yeah. All right. No,
like
what year?
Better.
Well, I don't. The year,
because
you're not
then you could
vote.
have instead of the president's race, instead of sausage race, you could have Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash and.
Correct. They are also Stars, though.
But they're outlaws. They're outlaw.
I got to be honest. I think just think they have to be careful with that name. So I think you go with Stars. I think
that's okay. All right. That's fine. That's
all right.
Fine.
So Nashville Stars. And what year is that there, sir?
Well, let's see. Probably say 2036.
All right. So, wow. 20 years between NL Central Division. I think that's what got me was – not just the answers from the execs, which I understand where they're coming from. And I appreciated like the insight that we got as a result of it. I really, really did. Especially the one who just talked about the gap growing for small market teams. I thought that was really refreshing. And I wish there was more conversation about that. But I think what really got me was looking in to just the geography of October and how completely and utterly absent the Midwest is from it. I mean, it's just alarming. Yep. You know, look, the NL Central had three teams qualify for the playoffs this year. That's good. But that also created a higher probability that at least one of them had to survive. And sure, one of them did. Milwaukee got into the championship series, but they had to face the Cubs in the division series to do so. They beat a Central team. Same thing in 2024. The AL Central puts three teams in the playoffs. That's great. And Cleveland gets the ALCS, but they had to face Detroit in the division series to assure it.
Didn't Cleveland face Detroit again this year? Who was it?
Yeah, later. But
in the first round, right?
In the first round, right. So they knocked each other out.
Eliminated basically before they started.
Right. And so then you look at what their success level is. They're 1-8 in the last, they're 1-8 in the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The last six championship series rounds, best of seven series, 12 different teams got to compete for them. And the Central teams, the Midwest teams, are 1-8. The NL Central hasn't won a NLCS game since 2018. That's 2018.
Sweet.
That's crazy. You know,
2019 sweep and a 2025 sweep.
And can I also offer this up too? Like if we're playing and we're not, but just work with me here. If we're playing by the imbalanced schedule of before times, right? When you play more division games than anybody else, there's no chance that the Central would have gotten three teams in the division because teams like Arizona and San Francisco would have gotten fat off the Rockies. And teams like the Mets would have gotten fat off the Nationals with those extra games. And so it's almost
go back and look last year when the three AL Central, because I did a story on this in spring training about how
They feasted on the White Sox. Yeah.
Feasted on the White Sox. Like one of those teams that made it was under 500 in games that they didn't play the White Sox.
That's true. That is true. But the White Sox were. I mean, the Rockies were historically bad, so that's a fair argument. That's a fair argument.
Sox lost more games than anybody in history.
But the Rockies had like a run differential of -424. So, I mean, they were getting worked. But to my point that like the lack of success in October by the Central divisions is alarming. It's just really, I mean, it's like, how do you, in the 3 years after the Cubs faced the Guardians in the 2016 World Series, right?
Faced the Indians.
Right. Okay. Faced Cleveland. Right. In the 2016 World Series.
That's how long ago it was.
Fair. That's a great point. Yes, that's how long ago it was. Then the next year, the Cubs went back to the NLCS. Then the next year, the Brewers went to the NLCS. Then the next year, the Cardinals went to the NLCS. You know, they had us, they were subleasing a spot in the NLCS. And since the pandemic, and I don't think this is unrelated, since the pandemic, the Central has just been wiped out. That shouldn't come as a surprise because at the same time, what else has happened? Ticket sales down. You have teams that were relying heavily, like the Cardinals, Brewers, these other teams, they rely heavily on ticket sales. You had empty ballparks mandated for a season, limited ticket sales for another season, and then they have to come out of that. Oh, and by the way, as they step foot out of that, they then walk into the regional sports network convulsion and the crater of some of their networks, which has hit the smaller market teams.
Well, that's the big
harder.
One.
It is the big one, because but these are all related.
The pandemic losses were, at least in terms of Chicago, at least in terms of the Cubs, were recouped immediately. The minute correct. They opened up the stadium, they were filled again.
That's correct. But it's like there's a whole group of these teams in the Midwest that got furloughed. And then when they got out of their furlough and started making some money, their air conditioning system went out and they needed a new roof on their house. And it was like just this concussive wave of blockades to their revenue.
Okay, but I'm going to.
And I think it's very fascinating. I'm not excusing the teams, but I think there are reasons why they ghosted October. I mean, there's a reason why the Midwest has ghosted October since the pandemic.
And some of it's symptomatic of circumstances. A little bit of it is stuff that they can't control.
Yeah.
Or can control in limited ways.
Sure.
But I can tell you from being there in the Cubs case, it was a choice. And they
right.
hid behind pandemic losses to gut a playoff roster. And
it's crazy.
By 2021, by the trade deadline in 2021, and by the way, on June 23rd, they were in first place that year.
Against
all odds after getting rid of players in the offseason, including Kyle Schwarber.
Right, who they non-tendered.
Who they simply non-tendered. They got nothing for him.
Yeah.
And by the 2021 trade deadline, they traded Bryant, Rizzo, and Baez. Now, you can argue about what those guys did since and what their value was and all that, and that's fine. But that launched them into a whole new round of tanking. And I'm not even going to call it rebuilding. They freaking tanked. And it was to restart the farm system, see what they could bring up through the farm system. And then you saw hand picking for a couple of off seasons, guys they signed to longer term deals that were going to be cornerstones eventually. And that's the roster that more or less eventually made the playoffs this past season. But they swung and missed in 23 and 24 after doing that. It was and again, that goes back to rebuilding that 52 Ford pickup truck. I think they expected to do it a little quicker and they whiffed on a few fundamental things like their bullpens, which they thought were going to be better than they were, and on. But that was a choice they made. They didn't have to do that. And that speaks again to what's going on in this industry. And again, when we talk about the labor and when we talk about how they're being used and who has resources and who doesn't, who's spending them when they have them, who's trying to compete, who's trying to just bilk the fans.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think all of that is worthwhile and it's all true. And I still stand by, like, you cannot ignore just this retreat from late October by an entire section of the country. It's just impossible to ignore. And
Derek,
I
still maintain that back when realignment came in, when this round of realignment came in 1994,
yeah,
that the Centrals were created the way they were to create, to engineer some sort of false parity by creating small market divisions.
And Yep.
And I was talking to, I was at the Hall of Fame in, I think it was 01, covering the Hall of Fame stuff. And the night before, you know, they had that gala the night before the induction ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And I was chatting up a guy that works for MLB, worked in their British office in London. And so I was asking him all about that. And then we were talking about realignment, and I was talking about this particular thought of mine. And just as I was talking about the small market divisions and it was manipulated to create this false parity, and Bud Selig walked by with his posse and he stopped and just to tell me he disagreed with that.
Okay.
And we went back and forth and argued. I said, well, how do you explain this? And then by the time we got two rounds into that dialogue, he'd had enough and walked away.
I can empathize.
But I think at the end of the day, like he didn't have, even he in that, you know, sort of, you know, private moment didn't have an explanation beyond that. That was better than my explanation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, in the first episode of, or one of the first episodes of this year for this podcast, Chip Carey said, you know, that one of the, I mean, and it feeds into what we heard from the executives, right? That realignment might be the answer. And Chip Carey said the answer is realignment by finances. Like, if you want to change the game, realign the teams by their revenues and watch what happens. I think it's interesting.
Nope.
It'd be hard to sell. It'd be hard to sell. But
not only would it be hard to sell, but that there would, that's not even unintended consequences. You would wind up with intended consequences of disincentivizing spending in the lower market division.
Correct. Correct. You would.
And yeah, that's not the answer.
That's interesting. Well, this has been, I've been playing the long game here, and I'm glad you brought up Bud Selig because, you know, and you did so after talking about the Cubs pulling apart their core. Because I think it's about time, all these years later, after our huge debate in the Wrigley Field press box about which player the Cubs should keep, that you tell me I was right. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I don't recall.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. I was so right. They brought him back this year after he retired. They're like, we need your help now. They never should have let him go. He was the one guy they should have kept.
Oh, you're talking
of
about
that
Shorter?
Whole group. No, Rizzo. Of that whole group, they should have.
Oh, yeah.
That's the guy they should have kept. I know the whole debate was Baez, Bryant, Rizzo, who are they going to keep?
Yeah.
Who they build around? No question. No question.
Well, I thought they should have kept Rizzo regardless.
Well, you said Baez.
You and I debated Baez. I still think that Baez would have had better success had he stayed in Chicago than by going to Detroit.
But yeah, he might have gone to center field quicker. He might have played other positions.
Who knows, but yeah, you know, and he's still a guy. I got to know. You know, I'm biased for Baez because
Scott.
Because I got to know him a little bit, and I always. I mean, his talent has always been off the charts. It's still there, even after he had that hip surgery or whatever it was.
Yeah.
His talent is amazing. He just gets his personality, his emotions, and I don't mean in a bad way, but he just needs something extra to perform. And I had more faith in him. And by the way, the Cubs did too, that he would continue a growth arc as he got older and matured, and I think he finally has maybe found something of that now in his career. But they were within 4 or 5 days of signing him to a long-term extension when the pandemic shut the game down. So
I remember that.
But Schwarber, you know, in retrospect, Schwarber's the most egregious of all.
That's fair. Yeah, the non-tender him is crazy.
And a lot of us were saying that at the time too. It was like, this is just money. You're not even pretending like this is getting value for him or trading him to get somebody younger, like you did with all those other guys at the deadline. And so you're the Chicago freaking Cubs. There's no justification for that.
No, there's none. All right. So to recap, we fanned out, we talked to executives. We got 21 clubs represented in our poll. 11 picked the Cubs, 7 picked the Brewers. And one said the Cincinnati Reds would be the next NL Central team to win a World Series. And one rider picked the Nashville Stars. So that's the recap.
Hey, and by the way, when you look back at the last team that did it,
yeah.
Theo Epstein was running that team, and he did use their resources.
He did.
He did play the cutthroat player acquisition game and got mm-hmm. And got redundant levels of talent at positions, including going out and getting Aroldis Chapman at the deadline at a time when a lot of people were, and they literally protested outside of Wrigley Field because of his domestic violence issues in,
yeah.
in Miami.
That's, who was the MVP of the World Series?
Ben Zobrist.
How'd they get him?
They got him by signing him to a 4-year free agent deal.
And one of the best pitchers they had was John Lackey. And how did they get him?
Yeah, well, John Lester, I think, is probably who you mean.
Both.
Both. They got him both.
They were both there. So how did they get both? Hey,
here, I got one for you.
And remember that right fielder who had the speech at the rain delay?
Jason
right?
Hayward, who by
yeah,
the
you know,
way,
how'd they get him?
You know, they call that, and that's one of the
was,
by the way,
was that a, was that a trade?
That was a
was he a homegrown player?
The biggest free agent contract in franchise history.
Oh.
To this day.
All
and
right.
By the way, they use that as another fig leaf. To
I don't know, man. For a draft and develop division, this sure seems like the last winner was a free agent team.
Yeah, right? Right? And that's the point, right? Is that, and that's why people pick the Cubs. That's why everybody picked the Cubs, because that's what they can do if they want to do it.
That is Gordon Whitmire, baseball writer at the Cincinnati Inquirer. He has covered a lot of teams and brings a lot of insight and is one of my favorite guests here on the best podcast in baseball. You can find his work there at Cincy Inquirer. You can follow him at GWMLB on X Twitter, right? GW, that's DUBMLB on Twitter. You can find all the Cardinals coverage, all the constant Cardinals coverage at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. You can find the best podcast in baseball. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you also have another podcast. Do you want to promote it there?
The Big Pod Machine in Cincinnati. We call it the best podcast in the universe.
Okay, then. All right.
But we don't have a trademark like you do.
Yeah, you can have that. No, that's just the nickname it's earned as opposed to the one it gave itself, right? That's all the better.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design, and it's available every week, even through the off season. Tender Day is up. As you're listening to this, the Cardinals have to make some calls, same with the Reds, on their arbitration players and all of their pre-arb players to offer them contracts. It still will baffle the mind that one of those days the Cubs decided, yeah, no, you know what? We want a roster spot and save money. So long, Kyle Schwarber. And here we are, and he'll be one of the highest paid hitters going. Remarkable.
Hey, I covered one that was even worse. I covered the Twins in 01.
Oh, David Ortiz.
In 02, yeah.
I mean, there's some similarity there. That's crazy.
That's unbelievable. And that was over what might have been a $2 million arbitration salary.
Wild. Well, Cardinals wish he would have stuck around in Minnesota. Cardinal fans do. Man. He like single-handedly beat them in a World Series because he got to. First base is always open. First base is still open because he passed it on his way.
He left it open as he waved.
He left it open as he passed by. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Gordo.
All right. Anytime, man.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at freestylelibre.us. This holiday season, give the gift that everyone actually wants, Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide, plus an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. From USDA-certified very tender filet mignons and perfectly aged ribeyes, to juicy burgers and gourmet sides and desserts that make every meal unforgettable, Omaha Steaks brings steakhouse quality flavor straight to your doorstep. Whether you're gifting family across the country or filling your own freezer, every box arrives perfectly packaged and guaranteed to impress. Because nothing says I love you most like a gift of Omaha Steaks. Skip the malls and the guessing. Go to omahasteaks.com right now. That's omahasteaks.com to save 50% site-wide, plus get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Hurry, this deal won't last. Omaha Steaks, delivering joy since 1917. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.